Cruz, Sandy, and Scott.
Plays, balls out every time.
Oh, my God.
Cruz, Sandy, and Scott.
Wait a minute. Don't run this jive by us.
Cruz, Sandy, and Scott.
It was like I was a genius. Oh, hey.
This is Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
So you, my friend, are on crack.
So, yeah, it's probably, I don't know if it's a cliche, maybe, and maybe you could say it's a bad excuse. I agree.
Here's Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
There's no question. We didn't think it. We thought he was a top 15 talent. That's why we're thrilled to get him at 31. And I think there's no question. If he hadn't had the couple issues that he's had, there's no way he would have been there for us at 31. I'm thrilled with the locker room that we have. We got a bunch of professionals in there, and I'm sure that he's going to learn a lot from the guys that are in there. So, coupled with that, with his physical talent, we think that we got a gem.
John Elway saying that he feels the Broncos have a gem in their first-round pick, corner Bradley Roby from Ohio State. Drew, Sandy, and Scott. Drew, tending to baseball matters, we'll take you through the final hour. We're joined once more by Dr. Rick Perea, one round into the NFL draft. Dr. Perea, we've been talking about physiological aspects, quantitative stuff. We get to the psychological, the qualitative now with you. Give us some general notions, comments, takeaways from the first round last night. What surprised you? What you thought teams did well in terms of evaluating from your perspective? What teams did badly, perhaps once again from your perspective?
Yeah, good afternoon, Sandy and Scott. It's great to be with you. Great day to be alive. So here we go. What I saw, generally speaking, is I think the people that drafted in the first round did a good job overall. But the one area, Sandy, that I think I bring to the table is the mental aspect of assessing personality. When we look at these players, we test them. We physically test explosion, speed, quickness, speed, all these aspects that's physiologically based. But we do not do a very good job in the NFL of assessing personality and really how that plays out in performance. So when you look at the draft choices that were taken yesterday, they're graded. And they're given a quantitative grade and an assessment. And that's fine. But here's the key. If you do not do a full personality makeup of these players, you are leaving a big component of their assessment off the table. And that really troubles me. There are about 8 to 9 teams that I know of that really use this stuff at a high level and understand it. But my contention is in the next 20 years, the NFL's got to catch up, for example, to the corporate world in terms of using these personality assessments, because they illuminate the mental side of being able to react and perform in the heat of battle. And what we don't know, let me give you an example. So if you got a great five technique, a defensive tackle from the University of Florida, he doesn't lose his speed when he comes to Denver. He doesn't lose his height. He doesn't lose his strength. But his mental composition will change being in Gainesville and Denver. When he gets hit in the mouth in the NFL, his physiologically is going to stay the same. That's consistent. It's his mental perceptual values that can change. And really, that's why some players don't succeed in the NFL, because once they get hit in the mouth, they either respond and they have that personality, the conscientiousness we measure in these personality assessments, or they don't. And then you hear NFL executives say, gosh, he was a surefire guy. What happened? Well, they're not delineating the mental side to the extent that it needs to be.
One of the questions I always ask when we go out to training camp, we sit out with these guys for 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever it is. I said, when was that moment that happened in camp that you realized you can play? Because going from my own experience, the first week or two, you're sitting there, I remember going back to the dorm or the hotel going, I can't play. I can't play in this league. It always happens. And then what you're talking about is, now which way do they fall?
Right.
Do they stay in that little depressed mode mentally, right, or are they overcome? Well, screw that and go the other way.
Exactly. And we don't know. See, the thing about it is, Scotty and Sandy, is that we don't know that until they experience it in an NFL camp, for example. Okay. If a lot of these guys dominated in high school, dominated.
All
of
them were all Americans at one time.
Exactly. Yeah. So they've dominated. But then they get in this context, in this situation, and those voices start in their head. Can I do this? Can I play at this level? And some players can regulate that. Most can't. So what we propose as performance psychologists is we say, hey, we can give you the tools to be able to regulate that arousal, regulate that anxiety, so you can perform at peak levels.
When you're talking about, again, you've mentioned it, 32 millionaires
yes,
this morning.
Absolutely.
Okay? and the assessments are critical. What are the factors that you would delineate that go into making those evaluations?
Okay, so, for example, there are five personality factors we look at in psychology. Okay, number one is neuroticism. Number two, extroversion. Three, openness, agreeableness, and conscientiousness. Let's start with conscientiousness. That means that you are able to take care of business when it needs to be taken care of. So, for example, do you have a want to succeed or a need to succeed? Those are two very different things, Sandy. So, for example, on my personality test on the Neo 5 factor, I score really high in conscientiousness. And what that means is I don't want to succeed. I need to succeed. Now, that can be from a deficit base or an asset base. It doesn't really matter. I mean, deficit means like you're always trying to prove yourself because of childhood experiences or whatever. And asset-based means that you're very positive with yourself and you just have a real deep thirst to succeed. Because if you give these athletes one of these personality assessments and they score low in conscientiousness, that's a huge red flag. Because that's what will regulate when they get smacked in the mouth, whether they come back and say, man, I can do this, or that voice starts in the head that says, like Scotty illuminated, man, can I really do this? And then that can spiral out of control. And if that's not regulated, these are the players that can be acutely depressed, not chronically depressed. Chronic is long term, but they become acutely depressed short term, and that will impact their performance, which could impact whether they make the team or not.
And can impact whether the team succeeds or not, especially if it happens too much across the board.
Absolutely. If you look at the Super Bowl, that snap, that first snap of the Super Bowl, or high arousal, high anxiety, it didn't get regulated. It didn't get regulated from the player's perspective, from the sideline perceptual values. You could see the players, you look in their eyes, they look like the deer in the headlights. That wasn't regulated, and that's key. We have to understand how important it is a performance psychologist or a mental coach can help players regulate that in the heat of battle.
In that context, what do you think of the Bradley Roby pick with all the talk of character issues,
right,
problems off the field? Lack of maturity.
Right.
He's a junior coming out.
Right.
Not a senior, a junior coming out. In that context, the Broncos say they investigate, they weighed in all those factors. Obviously, he's a talent, but you're talking again about that delineation between physiological, quantitative, and psychological,
right,
qualitative. In that context, does the pick make sense to you, or are there all kinds of sirens going off in your mind?
You know what? It makes sense from, if I look at it from the way Elway's looking at it. I understand what he's saying, okay? But here's kind of the critical thinking aspect that I look at. So if 20 other teams were willing to pass on him because of, quote-unquote, character issues.
How about 30 other teams?
Okay, so you got 30 other teams.
30 picks.
Yeah, but not maybe all those teams wanted him. So I'm just going to take a number like 20.
Okay, 20.
So we have all those teams that were saying, hey, thanks, but no thanks. If they were willing to analyze it at that level, then what my question then becomes, why were the Broncos willing to take that chance? Now, maybe they did their homework. Now, homework is not asking the coaches.
He's not asking Urban Meyer to see a good player.
Which I talked about a while ago.
Right, exactly. I heard you, Scotty. That is not doing your homework. Coaches are going to go to bat for their players. They fight with them. They sweat with them. They bleed with them. They love these guys. They're not going to give us the whole undivided, you know, objective truth. That's why we have these personality assessments, because they illuminate what we call covert behavior. Overt behavior is what you show me. You're jovial, you're funny, you laugh, all that. Covert behavior is your thoughts and perceptions. You know, just to give you an extreme example, Ted Bundy on the outside looked great. Good-looking guy, well-educated, articulate, but he had deep, dark thoughts. Personality assessments illuminate our thoughts and perceptions, which we can't see. So that pick, to me, is taking quite a risk, because you have some red flags there. Not white flags, but red flags. And so to me, if the Broncos feel like they did their homework, then great. But I hope it's from a psychological, not from a qualitative, just by asking Urban Meyer or his position coach.
Yeah, which I know, as I start doing the games, they start traveling around the psychologist. Are they as in-depth? Do they do that? Or are they just straight from somebody's couch? I mean, I don't know. I got to believe some teams are going to be better,
right,
than other teams.
Right.
But in that statement, we don't know. From, you know, sitting here and discuss this, how in depth they do. The thing is, you're pointing out, if they did their studies, good for them.
Right. And what my thing is, Scotty, is that there's eight, possibly nine teams, because one, I just got off the phone today with an NFL executive. that I, at the combine, I showed him these personality assessments and we sat down and I explained them to him. And he's like, whoa, why isn't everybody doing this stuff? And so when I explained to him about, you know, the conscientiousness piece, for example, or neuroticism, that's another factor we measure. Neuroticism means your moods. If you're high in neuroticism, that means you have a lot of negative moods. And so these things really are very reliable. So we want to know this about our players. What we do is we interpret these and we tell NFL executives, this is how it will play out as a player in the NFL. If you're highly neurotic, high in openness, high in extroversion, you are highly at risk for risky behavior. And we like that on the field. Okay, we want a train wreck from your outside linebacker on the field, but you don't want a train wreck off the field with your outside linebacker.
And a texter made, actually an email I received earlier, and we'll get into that a little more deeply in our final quarter hour with the good Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State University of Colorado. On your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL Draft, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. .216 on your home for the best live local coverage. The Broncos, the NFL Draft, Denver's Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, Sandy Clef, Scott Hastings, the good Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us. All right, I got a couple of things, one a text and one an email to bounce off you. I think they're excellent. From the 303 on the Total Beverage text line at 29588. After the Super Bowl, everyone was saying that the Broncos needed more attitude on their team. Now they got it. And everyone's complaining.
Yeah, well, we're not complaining. All we're doing is saying that these players have to learn to regulate it off the field. On the field, you want that nastiness. You want that attitude. You want that swag. But off the field, they have to learn to regulate it. And here again, Sandy, my job is not to come on here and make an argument for mental coaches, but here's the key. When you deploy behavior out on the football field, when you deploy your playing on a basketball court, that is human behavior. And so if we expect a corner to have that nasty, like this kid from Ohio State that the Broncos got.
Elway talked about mentality that he brings.
Yeah, and that's
great.
He likes
his mentality.
And that's wonderful. But here's the key, is that those players have to understand that how they comport themselves off the field is what they're going to be assessed and judged on ultimately.
Yeah, and can they tone it down or learn to control it? See, it's really funny. We talked about it during the break. It's a tough thing when you're in the middle, especially when you're 27 years old.
Right.
I think as we mature, you know, I had an old basketball coach, Eddie Sutton, always said, the longer you play, the slower the game becomes.
Yep.
It's the same thing with life.
Yes.
It's not just that we get older and that we're slower, but okay, listen, things are going to happen. I got a buddy of mine who just moved here, got laid off, some business sold, and so they laid everybody off. And I'm like, how you doing? He goes, I'm okay. I kind of thought this might happen. I'm out here just looking. I'm like, I'd be freaking out a little bit. But he understands it.
Right.
Life slowed down a little bit for him.
Right. Well, and the key is there's two levels we regulate. It's arousal, which is a physiological, and then anxiety. And so what would be very helpful, for example, if you want to start drafting attitude, if you want to start drafting nastiness, great. But you better get those kids early on in their rookie year and educate them about this arousal and anxiety and how to regulate that. You can literally, Sandy, teach them skills how to regulate their arousal, regulate their anxiety off the field so they can comport themselves in a way that's very professional and representative of a professional football team.
Here's another text. I like this one, too. Hate to bring this up from the 303, but didn't Tebow exhibit all the positive psychological factors you're talking about? How come that didn't turn out to be a highly valuable set of traits when it came to Tim Tebow?
Yeah, well, the one big factor with Tim Tebow is, and that not a lot of people knew this, Sandy, he is dyslexic. So when we ask a quarterback to go through their read progressions, okay, that's sequential thinking. Sequential means in order, okay, hot receiver, second receiver. He was unable to do that. So oftentimes when they asked Tim Tebow to sit in the pocket and go through his passing progression, after his hot receiver wasn't open, he was gone, and people got frustrated. So again, we come back to personality. If we would have done the appropriate personality assessments on him, we would have illuminated that. And Josh McDaniel was somebody that early in, you know, when he first became a head coach, I don't think he understood the value of that personality aspect because that wasn't run on him. So that's the piece that, you know, wasn't really illuminated for him. And as such, he ended up being a person that was typecast in a wrong situation. He was made for the position he had at Florida. Urban Meyer catered that offense to him, that run pass option. It was made for his skill set. In the NFL, they tried to fit him in a skill set that didn't fit his style of play. And most importantly, his mental competency and acumen didn't fit that style.
Yeah, and you can have the guy that can be the most mentally right from all your charts and everything. Perfect. The perfect specimen of what you want. Might not be athletic, might not be able to play.
Right.
Might not have the skill set that you need.
Right.
Tim Tebow, I loved his competitive nature.
Sure.
I loved how winning was more important, you know, than obviously losing. Hated to lose almost as much as he loved to win.
Right.
That was all great.
Right.
But you still got to have it to play the sport now. Now there becomes a physical thing.
Right.
That you've got to also have those skills. You got to be able to sit in the pocket and, as you said, be able to read whatever the things are. He struggled
and
with that.
And he's dyslexic.
He struggled with those things.
Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. This email I got, and this gets back to Roby again. I really like the Broncos pick without even looking at his stats. So definitely add to the synergy between the line and the secondary. It's absolutely essential for a truly complete defense. More important, I saw a guy who was very upset about not being picked earlier in the first round. I love guys who play with a chip on their shoulder. They always seem a little more dedicated and willing to do what's necessary to prove they're the best. Broncos certainly have had enough of these types of guys to prove their value. The problem comes when they not only play with that chip, but they live their lives with a chip on their shoulder. Seems that this is when they tend to get into trouble. I'd sit Bradley down right away and ask him if he's ready to dedicate himself to the team. Someone needs to explain to him the difference between playing with a chip and living with one. If he is mature enough to understand this and take it to heart, I think we have a future star. Is he kind of making your point?
Yes, he is. But here's the problem with that assertion, Sandy. It doesn't have a lot of validity because the coaches on that staff are going to coach the players in scheme, X's and O's, strategy. And they train, and the physical trainers train them in the physical part. They need to have a full-time, not sports psychologist, they need to have a mental coach, somebody that coaches mental awareness, mental perception, and mental values. Trevor Moat is the full-time mental coach for the University of Alabama. I just got off the phone with him today because we were talking about some draft stuff. But Trevor, his only job on the sideline game day is to regulate the players as they come off the field. If there's a turnover, as soon as the offensive coordinator gets done, Trevor steps in and takes them through a protocol. If the defense, you know.
And this is Saban's deal. Saban is fully on board, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. And so Trevor, his only job is on the sideline. So, for example, if the Broncos had that in the Super Bowl, they would have had someone there that could help the team
after
regulate.
After the bad snap.
After the bad snap, help get them back centered and focused so they can perform at peak levels. Because I'm going to tell you this. You can be all galaxy physiologically, but if you cannot regulate arousal and anxiety in the heat of the moment, you will not deploy your true physiological self.
Is this a muscle memory, so to speak?
In the brain?
In the brain that can be trained?
Yeah, absolutely. Train the brain. Yeah. I work with a girl out there. Her name is Rachel. Hopefully she's listening. But she does this neural conditioning. Like, you train your brain. You sit in the computer and you look at the computer and you literally train your brain to regulate arousal. It puts you in scenarios and situations that are stressful, and you literally can change the brain wavelength to help regulate that arousal and anxiety. So when you're in that situation on the field, that you can do it. And it's really great stuff. When you combine it with the stuff that we do, man, it's amazing work.
As you watched last night, Manziel dropped down the board, and you can see every reaction from him.
Yep.
What did you make of all that?
Well, I'll tell you what. He showed me a high level of arousal. He's sitting there drinking that water. You could see the tension in his jaw. You know, I'm trained in nonverbal communication. And I could see the tension in his jaw.
Absolutely.
And when he got out on stage and he did his little money thing with his thumbs, I think that was a method for him to kind of bleed off some of that anxiety.
Was that kind of an up yours gesture?
Knowing Manziel, yes. Knowing Manziel, that was his way of saying, you know what? Okay, here we go.
The 21 times he got passed.
The 21 times I got passed. Here we go, baby. Watch me, what I do in the future. But I'll tell you what. That's what you love about him, too, though, you know, Sandy and Scotty. He's a high arousal guy, And sometimes his anxiety gets a little best of him. That's what gets him tripped up off the field.
Yeah.
But, man, that kid will go to war with you. And I think I read a quote today. He says, I can't wait to pour my heart out for this team. How many NFL rookies do you hear say, I want to pour my heart out for a team? I'll take that all day long.
You know, speaking of that, made me think of a key word we always talk on radio, and we two words, actually, enabled and empowered.
Yeah.
That we feel a lot of young players feel like they've been empowered or enabled because of where they were drafted, the money, the contracts they signed. I'm assuming guys can be trained in all this stuff, like you said, to train the brain, what you're talking about. But that's something that needs to be dealt with, too, because I've seen guys that are all of a sudden, you know, all-world playing. They get paid, and all of a sudden they feel like they're entitled, they're empowered, and all of a sudden that work that got them to where they are stops.
And, I mean,
not the special guys, but yeah, you see that yeah, too much.
But here's what it is, Scotty. You just hit on the very core of what we call motivation. You call it intrinsic and extrinsic. Those are fancy words for internal and external. So extrinsic motivation means you're motivated by money, trophies, championships. You want your athletes to be intrinsically motivated, meaning they love the game, they love playing, they love hitting people. That's the intrinsic piece. When you pay people to play, that's an extrinsic motivator. So the key is, at the professional level, we have to be very creative on how to motivate our athletes intrinsically. It can be done. Theoretically, college sports is the highest level of intrinsic motivation, not professional. But we've got to figure out.
They're losing that because, especially in college basketball, because the one and dones and these guys are, hey, I've got to go there for a year.
Right.
But then the extrinsic is going to be taken care of.
Yes. And that's why you see people like the running back for Tennessee, Chris, what's his name? The running back that just. He got the huge contract, and then his
Chris Johnson.
Yeah. And then his performance went down.
Right.
That's the extrinsic motivation. You want your athletes to be the wolf climbing the hill, not the wolf at the top of the hill. And that's what you're talking about. When these players feel like they're the wolf at the top of the hill, then they feel entitled. The wolf climbing the hill is thirsty and has a need to succeed.
Very quickly, 15, 20 seconds. Baltimore, Ozzie Newsome taking Mosley.
Oh,
I take
you know
it that was a given for you.
You know, Alabama is such a tight-knit community. And for those that don't know, Ozzie played at Alabama.
Right.
But, yeah, that you knew that was coming down the pike. You know, there were some rumblings at Alabama that because of Mosley's injuries that he may drop a little bit.
And but the Broncos would have been very interested in if he had dropped a little bit more, yeah, 5 or 6 spots down, yeah, they could have gotten.
Absolutely. He's a kid that I've been around, and I'll tell you what, man, that kid is intrinsically motivated. He loves the game. It's not the external motivation. It's the play, the footwork, the technique, the contact. He loves that aspect of the game. He will be successful.
Doctor, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good
great to
see
be here,
you again,
guys.
That's Dr. Rick Perea. Scotty and I will continue to the top of the hour at 3. Then it's The Drive as our draft coverage continues on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL draft, of course. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
I'm waking up.
Martinez throws, and it's intercepted down the sideline by Roby. Roby to the end zone. Touchdown.
I think that, you know, my strengths are a lot. You know, I think it's my athletic ability. You know, I think it's pretty good. You know, I think my IQ, my football IQ, my instincts, my playmaking ability are all great. You know, my competitiveness.
It's Bradley Roby talking about what he considers to be strengths, what he might bring to add to the Broncos. And, of course, it was John Elway following the first round of the draft last night who characterized Roby as a player who could help them the most. Right now, have the greatest impact, one of the great phrases in the draft, players who can provide impact.
One thing you're never going to hear, though, right, Sandy, in the first round, yeah, you know, it's going to take 3 or 4 years for this guy's any good, and then it's just a 50-50 proposition.
Exactly right.
Never going to hear that.
You'll never hear, well, I'll make an exception. Dan Reeves, when he drafted Tommy Maddox, basically said, all our guys were gone. We had no choice but to pick him. But other than that moment of maybe revealing honesty on Dan's part, I have never heard a coach or an executive say anything other than this guy, wherever he was drafted, was the best guy on our board, far and away anybody
this
else.
This guy reminded me of Joe Montana.
Yeah, Yeah,
we hear that stuff too. And it's got to be like that. You know, it's got to be, even with Doctor talking about what Manziel said, you've got to say those things. Guys,
yeah.
I will say most guys are more in-depth into saying the right thing. All the executives are, first of all.
Well,
but even players are getting
he's
better.
He's out there.
Got
he's
it.
Selling the pick. He's not just speaking to us.
Which says,
in
it
the
says
media,
two things.
He's speaking to the fan base. And assuming correctly, I would guess, that most fans never heard of Bradley Roby.
Well, and it says, one, before they picked, and two, that it's not necessarily a sure thing.
Right.
If you will. I mean, it's, what's a sure thing? There's no sure things. Tony Mandrich was, what, the second pick in the draft once. Ryan Leaf was the second pick of a draft, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, sure thing, what does that mean? There was, what, an 83-5 quarterbacks taken. So, you know, what's a sure thing? But I think it also, you're right, when you have to sell a guy, wherever you drafted, even if you drafted, you know, five or six, if you have to sell the guy, then what is that really saying, to be honest with you? Well, we hope he's good. I listen, of all the guys that did analytical stuff, and I know you guys had the NFL Network out there.
Yes.
And I was able to go back and forth, but ESPN, first of all, I wish they combined the teams, the two broadcast
the best
teams.
Of both
the best of both, pretty good. I like Mike Mayock. I don't necessarily like him on games, but I love when he's breaking
play. He's good on the draft.
Oh, he's excellent.
On the draft.
I think he's absolutely excellent. And it's really surprising. Actually, the Roby highlights they showed were all miscues.
Yeah.
We're all getting burned in that Wisconsin game.
But, in that Wisconsin game with the one guy burned him, and he didn't seem to be able to follow the ball or find the ball.
Yeah, he doesn't turn to find the ball well enough, and that was his big knock on him. But he also did say positive. He was the most athletic corner with the one of the biggest ceilings that was out there. So from that standpoint, picking a 31, then they probably got a pretty good guy, right? From that standpoint.
Yeah, I think from that standpoint. And this defensive coaching staff seems to be a very good developmental staff.
Yeah.
You know, Webster came on last year as a rookie, as a third round pick. Harris, undrafted college free agent, is on the verge of becoming a star.
Yeah. Trevathan, one of your defensive leaders now, sixth round pick.
Malik Jackson, fifth round pick. Your most improved defensive player last year was probably, if it wasn't Trevathan, it was Malik Jackson.
Right.
So you're working with a guy who may have some maturity issues, yes, but you can't teach the kind of athleticism he brings. He doesn't have to be a great star right at the beginning. He's smart, or at least he was well coached in the sense that he was asked about who are the defensive backs that you come on in here and admire, and, you know, he mentioned Revis, which you understand, but right away he got to Harrison Tlaib in a way that was more than just seemingly lip service. He'd done some work. He said, I remember Harris at Kansas, watching him, thought he was a pretty good player on a lousy defensive team. Guess what? Roby, and I guess Shazier for that matter, were two players last year, and maybe the other nine guys must have been really bad, because that Ohio State defense was not very good last year. And these two guys obviously are first-round draft picks coming from the Ohio State defense. So the other nine guys must not have been very good. But he's saying that he's watched these guys and, you know, expects to learn from Chris Harris, even though he's a first-round pick and Harris wasn't drafted at all.
We talked about it a little while ago, and we were talking during the break with the doctor about, you know, the roles and accepting roles and adhering to those roles and how that builds chemistry and everything else. We've said for years that having Champ Bailey there and being able to learn from a guy that's going to go in the Hall of Fame someday at the cornerback position, how good that is for the younger guys. All the younger guys always sang his praises also. Well, you don't have Champ back there. You don't really have that veteran for the really kind of the first time, that veteran guy that, and when I say veteran guy, that veteran kind of Bronco guy. Dawkins came in from the safety position, was so well known. He automatically came in, and when he spoke, people listened.
Absolutely.
But Tlaib's not necessarily, I don't think, one of those guys, is he? Ward seems to be.
The Patriot players said that he was great in the room, though.
Well, so that's good. But our point being, we were talking about this the other day, and it goes back to what the doctor says. Not only do you got to have a leader of your team, and we all know that Peyton Manning's your lead.
Right.
You got to have leaders in the front office also. But there's got to be other leaders. I mean, in an army, you don't have a general and then a whole bunch of privates. You know, you got a whole bunch of levels that go between that general and that guy, that foot soldier that's going down there. It's got to be the same way in a locker room. We know who the general is. The 4-star Eisenhower or the 5-star Eisenhower general is Peyton Manning. But who are those other guys? You know, the two guys that you're counting on the most defensively right now, Potros stepped up last year, and I thought
by the end of the year seemed to be the leader
took
of
the
leaders
mantle of
on
that.
Defense.
Took the mantle of being that leader on the defense. Can Ward come in here this year and do that right away? From all the times you hear him talk, he was on our show
that's
just last week.
That's what they're talking about, T.J. Ward being that guy. Maybe more than Aqib Talib, it's T.J. Ward doing that stuff because T.J. Ward's a banger.
See, and that's what I think we're going to find here, what is it, in a week or two, 10 days or whatever it is when the first OTA starts there at Dove Valley. That's got to start developing and to probably develop quicker than before because there is no Champ Bailey anymore. And guess what? Guy who's been a captain every year he was here, there's no Wesley Woodyard anymore either. And he was a captain for every year he was here. So there's going to have to be somebody step up and take the officer's training exam and all of a sudden become that colonel or whatever on that defensive side and say we can do it. Pot roast, you know, from what he played with the last third of the season in the playoffs, okay, there's one of your guys. Von Miller needs to take that role over, and he's not there yet. DeMarcus Ware, forgot about him.
DeMarcus
Ware. Probably another guy.
A new guy, but
they're
you
all
would
new guys.
Expect him to be that guy.
So isn't that kind of funny? The three guys we've really mentioned most that can really take this locker room over are all free agents, all guns for hire, if you will. They're the guys that are going to have to be those leaders on your defense.
We've talked about this emphasis on Bronco defense, at least in the early stages, in the first round or the first picks the last 4 years. And I want to probe that a little more deeply when we continue to take it to the top of the hour at 3 o'clock. How through the hiring of not only John Fox, but Jack Del Rio, very strong personality as the defensive coordinator. There is a defensive mentality, again, empowering defensive people in this organization, going back through the years, back into the 60s with Saban, then with Ralston, Red Miller, Reeves, Shanahan. Apart from the 2 years from Wade Phillips, the head coaches are always offensive guys. Now you have John Fox and you have Jack Del Rio, very strong personality, two defensive-minded guys. I think that has a lot to do with the Broncos drafting for defense.
The defense.
First pick the last 4 years now in the draft. Three first-rounders and Derek Wolfe back in 2012. 243 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos in the NFL draft. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. His baseball business with the Rockies moving from Arlington to Cincinnati. Open a 3-game set with the Reds starting tonight and bidding for yet another series win. It's been a strange dynamic, though, Scotty, quickly with the Rockies. They've been on the verge of sweeping any number of series this year. They've won a bunch of series in a row. They haven't swept one yet. They get to that third or fourth game, in this case with Texas,
and don't close
it out.
And
they don't close it out. And it's, I mean, they're playing great. Listen, you'll take 1-2 out of every three out of every four, of course. But it's been a little mystifying why they haven't been able to win that final game of a series with an opportunity to sweep.
Well,
there have been at least four series this year where they've won the first two games of the first three games and have lost the third of the fourth.
It'd be interesting to talk to the doctor about that.
If because that's a psychological deal.
Because I really think it is. I think there is.
Well, you've talked about this. It's the Sunday syndrome, the getaway day syndrome that has plagued them in years past.
In years past. And it's the same thing you see in seven-game series from a lot of teams where they'll go in somehow and they'll steal that first game, and then all of a sudden, how'd that team ever win game one? They got beat by 30 in game two. And it's that satisfaction gene or something. But, no, I was thinking the same way. And I obviously you turn in the game late. I didn't catch the beginning of it or anything like that. And it's 5-0 already. And you're like, all right, well, they've already won 3 of 4, so they're happy. And then I think that is pervasive throughout the whole organization, because as soon as it's over, First St. Drew says, well, they get beat 5-0, but they won 3 of 4, and they only didn't score any runs tonight, shut out for the first time, but they scored 30 runs in the last three right. games. And I'm like, but and that's not living in the now. And it's funny, because I was sitting on the couch watching that, and I was going, you know what? I get critical when I stay hard, and even when we used to have Joel Dreesen here every day, and I loved his perspective on all of it, we'd be critical on a team that went 13-3. And the fans would go, right. Well, you're critical. Because that's when you're more critical.
And it was winning by 15, 16 points a game.
Listen, when your team is going to win 72 games and lose 90, I mean, do you need to be critical? You know they stink,
yeah,
right?
Right.
But it's a team that's winning that you've got to nitpick on the little things. And some people on the text line or whatever, they don't get that. And to me, it's when you're 13-3, you got to even be more critical about your team. That's what I think, and that's what I hope they do within the locker room.
What would you like to see along those lines the Broncos do? And I made the point before the break how it's interesting to watch them now. And listen, Dan Reeves, an offensive coach who was honored this week with the announcement that he'll be going to the Ring of Fame later on this year, along with Rick Upchurch and Gene Mingo. Dan's first pick as Bronco coach was Dennis Smith, the safety from USC, in the first round of the 1981 draft.
And to this day,
an offensive player, but it was a terrific pick by him.
How many years ago was that? 33
years ago.
And still maybe one of the toughest guys that's ever put on a Bronco jersey. And he was the first pick of Reeves.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
That's why he picked him.
And Dan came back 8 years later with Steve Atwater. And they went Steve's rookie year to the Super Bowl.
And I'll tell you what, and even though it wasn't Dan picking him, it was a trade that got Elway here. The one thing you can never not say about Elway is that he was tough. I mean, Elway had a toughness about him,
absolutely.
Too. He'd knock him, however you want to knock him, fine. But he was tough.
And you're seeing that in his drafting philosophy. I agree with everything Rick Parrilla said. I hope the Broncos have done more than casual investigation on Roby. I trust that they have, and we'll hear from Roby in about 10 minutes live out at Dove Valley. He'll be conducting his first press conference. Call last night, but this is press conference today. He'll be out there, and we'll pick up that press conference live here in about 10 minutes. But he's looking for something that was clearly missing, and we talked about it with Dr. Parrilla, too, from that Super Bowl game. And you saw it on the sideline. You saw it on the field. You saw it in the body language. You saw it everywhere. And that's a distaste for losing and a certain amount of anger. And it's how you regulate that. You know, you don't want to be the most penalized team in the league, but you also, Scotty, don't want to be the least penalized team in the league either.
No. Listen, it all boils down to whether you have talent also. And when the Raiders were actually relevant, they had thugs and nasty guys on their team, and I think led the league more times than not.
More times than not, penalized. Penalties, yes.
You go back to the 30-on-30 with the bad boys that we talk about. You know, we're up there
up
personal
there
fouls as the season went on every year. But there becomes an intimidation factor with some of that. If you're getting 5-yard penalties for illegal motion because the offensive lineman can't make a proper snap or doesn't remember the snap count, that's one thing. Taking a guy and pile drive him into the ground once in a while to send a message, those are the kind of penalties once in a while you take, don't you? Sends a message. Because eventually that guy, I always tell a story. Now I'm an eighth grader. Now I probably got a concussion on the play, but I want to be honest. But it was way back in the 70s, who cares? I'm playing safety for my football team. And we're playing against this team from Missouri. It was a really good team, had this big physical running back. And we're on goal line defense. He comes up this hole. I pop this guy. Bam! Light flashed, which probably I assume was close to being concussed. Pop, light flashed. I drop this sucker at the 1-yard line. Guys are picking me up. I ain't got time to be wobbly. These guys are picking me up. Slap me on the back because I stopped their big old muscle dude. They run the exact same play. I'm right there in that hole again. I went, whoops. Moved a little bit to the side, put the shoulder in there because I didn't want to hit him that hard again because that hurt. Well, that's the same thing that physical play gives teams. It may be subtle. Still made the tackle. Guy fell in the end zone. Didn't stop him. Still made the play, but a little safer. And that's what kind of the physical nature, I think, of especially football. When guys go across the middle, we see how many times we've seen receivers get popped one time. The second time they go there, all of a sudden the ball looks like it's pretty good thrown, and their arms all of a sudden become about 10 inches shorter than they were a while ago. You know, he's still trying to make the play, but he's trying to make it a little safer, and that intimidation just want to play for you.
Well, we'll see. We talked about it earlier, how the first round is for show. And to borrow or slightly twist the old golfing phrase, what is it, driving for show and putting for dough, these next 2 days, the end of the draft, that's money time for the people doing the drafting. That's when you build your championship. You got six, scheduled at least, six Bronco picks remaining, two today, four more tomorrow. And in a draft, they say,
is
as deep as any draft anybody can remember.
Well, yeah, like I said, this is, and it's fitting that it's in Radio City Music Hall, because last night we got to see the Rockettes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, last night the Rockettes came out kicking the legs up and doing all this stuff. Tonight we get to see the Janitors sweep the floor a little bit. Tomorrow they're going to put some new paint on the walls. And it becomes really blue collar. Today and tomorrow, blue collar days.
Exactly.
Right? And yet, in the second, third round, you get a lot of great players second, third round.
Sure you do.
But it's still more the blue collar day. The Rockettes went home and took their pantyhose off and washed them in the sink.
Yeah. And ESPN's ratings probably won't be 48% greater than they were last year. For tonight, last night they were.
Yeah, well,
isn't that amazing? 48%. They got what was the number I saw? I think a 6-8. NBA. This was with LeBron and the San Antonio Spurs in action last night. Got like a 2-7.
But the Spurs were 26-point game in the second quarter.
Oh, I understand. So, they weren't. They weren't.
I didn't even watch that.
They weren't great games. And you know, the hockey was okay, but the hockey's got, if the NBA is getting a 2-8, the hockey's getting 1.2 or 0.7.
Find those,
and it's channels on NBC Sportsnet or CNBC, and that requires a little more of an effort. But between the NFL and NFL Network, I think I saw the total rating as something like an 8-6 or 8-7. You combine the two.
When you combine the two.
To watch people get chosen.
Well,
but the NFL, from not wanting the draft to be televised at all and not understanding why it was 34 years ago,
and that's why
come on to put a great television production out there on an annual basis. And heck, they'll lengthen this thing. They'll put it out further into May now that they've seen that the competition, even further into the hockey and basketball playoffs, is not going to touch them.
Well, let me just say this. One, it also says this. The power of a star. The only true star. There's only one true star in the draft last night.
Manziel.
Clowney, they tried to put up there, but there's
only one real star. Manziel was the only one.
Manziel.
Star.
Why? You got to believe that not only Cleveland, but probably the NFL hopes he's the real deal. Because
you don't think they have a vested interest? Of course.
Let me throw this at you.
They have a powerful vested interest.
We both think that he's more talented as far as the quarterback stylings than Tebow was.
Oh, yeah.
But Tebow was a bonanza for the NFL and the Broncos, to be honest with you, right? He was a bonanza.
And for ESPN and the NFL Network and all the above.
Bonanza.
Exactly right.
An absolute bonanza.
Exactly.
In Cleveland, they're hoping this because, you know, they want their franchise to get better. But the NFL, you don't think where now this year they can start swinging games from like week three that NBC doesn't hope Cleveland can play and everything?
Absolutely. All right, we'll reconvene on Monday at noon. Next, The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac. And in a few minutes, we'll hear from Bradley Roby, live from Dove Valley, on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL Draft. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.